Hello and welcome to Extra Feature Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 326. I am Doug Hainer and I am here with Simon Watson, the man who invented extra features. The podcast, at least, not extra features on DVDs.
Well, I should have been that guy too, because I'm so smart. See, I have no hair, so I have to use my follicles. You know what's weird? Extra Features, I think, is heading into its 16th or 17th year. Oh, it's my daughter, 16. So it'll be 15th year this year, 15 or 16. Yeah, she'll be 17. It'll be 16 this year. And basically in a February after a snowstorm, because I've told you this story. I'm sure listeners have heard this story, but since the beginning of the year, I'll tell it again quickly. I was listening to a lot of podcasts back then. And I'm like, I can do this. And me and Kevin went to his house, and it was the biggest snowstorm Toronto had had in 30 years. And piles of snow, and I'm talking like 20 feet high. Me trying to find a parking spot, me and Kevin trying to record on Audacity. And I went nuts because I was using Audacity. I gave up and went and bought – it was an old PC. I think it was a PC we tried the first time, and I hated it so much I went and bought a Mac that week. And we switched to a Mac, and okay. I switched back, and that's why. So there you go. Well, that's all right, the quick then. Story.
How was your? I was going to ask, how was your holidays?
Good. I had a week off over Christmas for the first time in 22 years. So basically, excellent. 3 days. I worked a lot, but that was fine. I worked New Year's Eve, worked New Year's Day at my other jobs, and that was about it. I watched a lot of stuff. Prepping for the top 10 list that's coming up very soon. I have one film left, actually two, but one I can't find. I've given up trying to find the zone of interest. I don't know where people are watching it. I cannot find it.
I have two movies left to watch as well, but they just won't be on my list. But yeah, they're Zone of Interest and American Fiction. Two movies I really want to see, but I haven't had a chance to. So
the funny thing is, I'm watching American Fiction this week. And I'll be watching okay. Broken Leaves is the other one I haven't watched. I'm hoping having them done by the weekend.
Okay. Excellent. So
they're on my list for Thursday and probably Saturday before we record. If we record this weekend, it'll probably be Saturday or Sunday. Hopefully we'll be ready. So how is having the whole Hainer family back? They're all in the house at the same time again.
Yes. Yeah, we're all here. We actually put out our Hainer family Christmas special. Volume 3 this year. So we completed the trilogy. And
I have not watched it yet. It's on my list of things to do.
Okay.
So I apologize to Owen. I will watch it. I've watched all the other ones and love them. I will get to it. I haven't shown up yet, so I'm very disappointed. Hopefully there's a surprise in 3.
I'm just saying watch the credits.
Oh, crap. I'm in trouble. Sneaky bastard. I love it.
Yes.
You know I look forward to it. Okay, now I know I'm watching later on tonight. Guaranteed watch, people. That's Doug Hainer's Family Christmas, available on YouTube. And while you're there, the Extra Featured Podcast occasionally puts up interviews every once in a while with our new intro, which hasn't showed up yet, but it will probably this weekend when I have time.
Excellent.
So that's it, Doug. Let's get going.
All right. And just from the jump, I want to say that we do spoil movies because the first movie we're going to talk about, I don't know how I can talk about it without spoiling it. So without that, I think we're going to jump right into Saltburn, directed by Emerald Fennell, starring Barry Keoghan, Jacob Elordi, Rosamund Pike, Allison Oliver, Archie Madeku, and Richard E. Grant. So would you like me to start off with this
one? Yeah, you can go first. I don't care. Whatever. Okay. It's New Year. We can mix it up.
Sounds good. First of all, I loved Emerald Fennell's first movie, Promising Young Woman. So I was really looking forward to seeing this. I heard all the stories about how wild and crazy this movie is. watching it, I will be 100% honest, it wasn't that crazy. I feel like I've seen everything pretty much in this movie before. It didn't seem that crazy to me. And honestly, I wasn't really liking it. I felt that it was just going nowhere. I didn't care for anything. I didn't know why Barry Keoghan was doing what he was doing. And that is until the very end. And this is where the spoilers come in. It's because he's playing the long con. He wants to rob them. This was, to me, it felt like The Talented Mr. Ripley. It felt like Emerald Fennell doing Patricia Highsmith here. Instead of Thomas Ripley, we have, I forget the character's name, but we had Barry Keoghan in the Thomas Ripley role. So I enjoyed the ending when he explained everything. It just wasn't enough to save the overall movie for me. I gave this one 3 out of 5.
Okay, let's back this up. I found this, I liked the first hour, I thought was kind of interesting. The second hour when they start taking people out, I just didn't care. I'm like, can this just end? I don't care. I have no interest in these people anymore. I'm bored. And I had the same problem with her other film, Pretty
Promising Young Woman.
Promising Young Woman. I didn't like that either. And I have exactly the same pacing issues. I get bored with her films. I'm like, get to the point. I don't care. But I got to say, if we're going to spoil this, the end of it was fantastic. The little run through the house at the end, fantastic. Yes. I will give that a full enjoyable thing. I just didn't care. I honestly didn't like anybody in this film. I wasn't rooting for anybody, wasn't rooting against anybody. I just really, the last half an hour, wanted to end. I just didn't care anymore. That. And I'm just like, I gave it a 4 out of 10, so a 2 out of 5. I can't pass it because I didn't enjoy it.
Okay.
It's well shot. I thought it was a good idea, but I'm like, I've seen Talented Mr. Ripley. That's amazing. This is not amazing to me. This is just kind of like, it's Emerald Fennell doing Emerald Fennell. Got it now. It's 2 for 2. I haven't liked Emerald. Let's try to get me a little big Simon happy. Not that you need to, but I was hoping.
Okay. That's fair.
Hold on.
So before I guess this review.
I just want to say, Barry Keoghan is impressing me more and more in every film I see him in. I got to say, he does a wonderful job.
Yes, yes, he is really coming into his own. I want to give him full credit.
And I liked, and I love Rosamund Pike. She can do no wrong for me. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the acting. I just did not find the storyline interesting. So maybe I should massage that a little bit more.
Okay. So I'm guessing this one's ending up towards the bottom for you. And our next movie will be The Bottoms, or Bottoms, directed by Emma Seligman. Starring Ayo Edebiri, Rachel Sennett, Ruby Cruz, Havana Rose Liu, and Kaya Jordan Gerber.
Oh, you're going to hate me for this. I love parts of this film. Absolutely thought this was hysterical at times. And other times I was like, this is a bad High School Musical. Like, parts of it are great. Parts of it I just thought were just okay. And that was my problem with the film. I was found, I was going up and down and down. And then at one point I was like, I'm bored. Let's get going. I know where we're going with the story. Let's go with it. But I think it's fun. I really don't want people to think I didn't think this was fun. It's really fun. And I can see why some people will love this film. And I get that. But I kept having flashbacks of 10 Things I Hate About You every time we went in the stands. I'm like, this is 10 Things I Hate About You, which is the perfect teen film ever. And I'm just like, it's solid. It's just not great. And I wanted Shiva Baby. And that was my problem. I loved Shiva Baby so much. I came into this with all that goodwill from Shiva Baby. And I got to give her credit. She gave me a totally different film. She showed me she could do different things. I had times buying the characters' agendas. It was really my main problem. Okay. Like, I liked the chats. I thought the chats were great. They were funny. The Fight Club made me laugh so hard. Marshawn Lynch is the teacher. Perfect casting. Yes. Awesome. I just had a little bit problem with the lesbian angle at times. Just, I thought they were overreaching themselves a lot.
Okay.
And I really wanted them to hook up. You know what I mean? Because she kept going after that one chick. I'm like, come on, really?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I liked it. Didn't work out. I thought that was a positive in the film. I really did. But the other one worked out. So overall, I liked it. I just didn't love it.
Okay. That's fair. I am on the love it side of this.
I know. I told you. I know you are. I read your review. Now you follow me on Letterboxd, I noticed.
Yes. I love that this movie has no connection to reality at all.
None. Zero. I mean,
it starts with the jock getting tapped by the bumper of a car, and then the next day he has crutches. Yeah,
stuff like that. So good.
And then yes, and it just escalates from there. Like, the violence just gets more and more outrageous. And I mean, this movie, there was no sacred cows in this movie. This movie even made fun of, you know, school shootings, when the guy getting bullied and he's like, I'm going to blow up the school. And then at the end, when the tree blows up, he's like, oh, I was going to do that. I mean, this movie went after everything. They always say you can't make movies like that anymore. Well, they did with this one. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I laughed all the way throughout it. Marshawn Lynch, he was amazing as the teacher.
So good.
Just, I loved everything about this movie. I'm in the love it camp. I gave this one 4 out of 5.
Which, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a fun film. Yeah. I mean, some people are going to get more out of it than others. I think it probably, for me, it would need a rewatch just so I get the pacing down. I mean, I'm very fussy about pacing in my old age. I like, it's got to be well paced. I don't know why. I think the problem is I just watch too many films. But I have to tell our viewers, they'll be happy. I've taken a break. I've cut down. I finished off Love Boat season 4. Now I'm ramping back up, though. I took a good month of relaxation and just watched some random crap I had lying around the house, and I'm back in. I just get burnt out at Christmas. Sorry, people. Just burnt out.
I get that.
Too many parcels. Happy Christmas. Hi, here you go.
Well, you mentioned Christmas, and that comes around in December. So I guess we will discuss May December, directed by Todd Haynes, starring Natalie Portman, Julianne Moore, and Charles Melton. I guess it's my turn to start here. I don't know what I was expecting from this film. I remember the story of Mary Kay Letourneau when it was happening. I remember seeing it on the news. This movie was so much funnier than I thought it would be. When the movie starts and Natalie Portman's getting ready, and then you hear like the cover of the Eminem song with the music, that's when I started to get what this movie was. It is an incredibly dark comedy. Natalie Portman, when she is on, she is one of the best actors around, and she was amazing in this movie. Her line to Charles Melton towards the end, "This is what adults do," it was chilling. I mean, I say this movie's funny, but that line was chilling. She was evil in this movie, and I loved every second of it. I've seen this movie described as like if David Lynch did a Lifetime movie. It's just dark, and I don't know. I loved this. I gave this one 5 out of 5. I didn't know what to expect from it and ended up just loving it.
Okay. Let's break this down. First off, Dale, did you bring enough hot dogs? Because I don't think we have enough hot dogs. I love how this film just sort of gently holds your hand in the beginning. Like, he sets it up like a Lifetime movie. You come in, it's relaxing. You're like, oh, this is kind of good. And Julianne Moore just blows me away how good she is.
She's never bad.
She can play anybody, I think. And just, I do remember bits of this storyline, but I mean, being Canadian, I don't think it played as much up here. At the time, but I had to do some reading on it, so it's fine. And then I just wanted to read a bit, so I knew what I was watching. And I'm sitting, Charles Melton impressed me, but the scene, I do want to get into one particular scene. When she goes to the pet shop.
Okay.
And she lies on that back step. And they do the long shot. Blew me away. I'm like, oh my God, Natalie Portman's got it. Like, just that whole, the music coming in. I'm like, you guys win. I think you're right. I think Portman should get, I would say, gets a nod for this 100%.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see her not. I don't think anybody else will think. Well, maybe best supporting, but I can't guarantee that. Should be up for screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
But I just.
Maybe Julianne Moore as supporting actress. I could see it.
But you could just see Portman becoming worse and worse as the movie getting on as she digs deeper and deeper. She becomes. I think she's becoming the character she's supposed to be studying. I think she's almost going back into that black swan mode, I find, by the end of this film. Yeah. And I love how she starts off at one place and totally moves to another place. And I find Julianne Moore moves too, and so is Melton. I find that all these characters just move. And you can tell they're not happy when the daughter doesn't want to be there. That's the one thing I thought was weird when the daughter's like, eh. She did not seem to have any interest in coming back. I mean, there's not really anything I can ruin about this film, but I'm just saying people need to watch it. It's just so well shot and paced and enjoyable. And the vicious lines, especially the one, I wish I could remember it. Portman's talking to Julianne Moore. I think they're at the school. And she says, "Would you play me, remember something?" It's right near the end.
Oh, I don't remember.
Know the line. The big line in the film. I'm like, oh my God, that was gripping. Julianne Moore knows what she wants. And I love how it shows us the movie at the end. You're like, this is complete Lifetime trash.
Yes.
And I thought that was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, the end of the film. So yeah, this is just a wonderful film. Go ahead. Do you remember the line?
Yeah, and I don't remember, but I wanted to tag on to what you were saying about the end when she's asking, can we just do one more shot? Yes. I just want to do it. I think we could get it more real. And that just, I was like, that blew me away. Like, Natalie Portman was amazing in this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So I guess we can move on now to Leave the World Behind. Directed by Sam Esmail, starring Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke, Mahershala Ali, Mahala Harold.
Oh, that's his daughter.
Yes.
Oh, it's my turn to start. Excellent. So I got a quick story. My wife loves Julia Roberts. Loved Julia Roberts. So I said, I got to watch this movie for the show. She's like, okay. We're supposed to watch it one night, and I had to do an interview. Oh, I had to watch a movie, so we didn't get to watch it for an interview. So we finally get to the film, and we watched it probably Sunday night. No, Saturday. Probably Sunday night or whenever we got to watch. Oh, yeah, there's no football games. So we watched it Sunday night. So but 2 hours into the film, my wife goes, you know what? I'm done. I said, what do you mean? She goes, I don't care. I'm done. I can't watch this anymore. And leaves. She leaves at the scene. When the little girl is lost and they're looking for her.
Okay.
I'm sitting there going, this film is fucking too long. It has lacks direction. Completely lacks. I have a problem. Ethan Hawke's driving off at one point. So everything's going to hell. We know that. And I mean, they're not really explaining a lot and this and that. I'm like, okay. No, I lied. So Kevin Bacon sees that woman speaking in Spanish. On the side of the road, Ethan Hawke. Sorry, okay. I'm making
yes.
Ethan Hawke.
Okay, yes.
Was there a point to that scene?
the fact exactly. that he's helpless.
We knew that ahead of time. He told us that. And I'm sitting there watching this. I'm like, this is so dumb. It's going nowhere. We're having the same conversation over and over and over again. Nobody trusts one another. Whatever. Don't care. And I mean, I never really understand why Mahershala Ali left the city. Because he knew ahead of time things were going to happen? That's the only thing I had to try to give myself.
He does mention that his client did vaguely mention something going down. So I could see that his government client did mention something vaguely. So
okay, that whole Kevin Bacon kind of scene knew. Was terrible. On the porch,
yes.
About to, like, can somebody shoot somebody? Like, get to the point of this. At the end, oh, okay, here are your drugs. You know, take two of these. You'll be fine. I'm like, he has no teeth. He's not going to be fine. Then I'm going to keep going. Then they look for the little girl. So if I ruined anything, like, I'm pretty much telling the movie the fast version. You don't have to sit through 2 hours of this nonsense. They go flee the little girl. So they never do find her, technically, in the movie. And she's in the home eating all the food, right? She breaks into the house, eats all the food, and then goes downstairs, finds the bomb shelter, and puts on Friends, the one episode she's never seen, and presses it, and escorts it to the end, and they do a nuclear explosion. I'm like, this is dumb. There's absolutely wasted 2 hours and 20 minutes of my time. I got nothing out of this. Absolutely nothing other than I am really bored. I saw no point to this. I don't really understand what this sets up. Like, there was no real end. And honestly, no real beginning ever started for me. This film literally does nothing for anybody in it. And other shows me Ethan Hawke can act, Julia Roberts can act, Mahershala Ali can act, and Mahershala Ali's daughter. Excellent. They're all good at what they're doing. But I'm not getting anything of interest. Nothing. Just constant talking about nothing. Just general, I don't care. Like, give me a bear to eat somebody or something or Jason. Like, there is nobody to fight in this movie. Even Kevin Bacon just goes, yeah, okay, I'll see you later. Really? You introduce him at the beginning of the film for no reason to have a setup with him at the end and to give the guy some pills? Don't care. Help me out, Doug. What have I missed?
Nothing. I kind of had the same reactions you did.
Okay, good. Did your wife watch it and leave near the end?
No. Go back to the I do find it incredibly funny that this movie was made specifically for streaming, but ends up being an ode to physical media at the end because
yes. You
never know. Because you never know when bad things will happen, and whatever you have streaming won't be available anymore. So that was my main takeaway: is you know, buy the Friends DVDs because they won't be on Netflix forever.
Are they like on you Netflix said, now?
They were. I don't know if they still are.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I missed it. Friends will be somewhere, always.
Like you said, the acting, all really good. Ethan Hawke, I think out of everybody, he surprised me the most because I never really considered Ethan Hawke like this great actor, but he was. I thought Ethan Hawke was fantastic in this. Aside from that...
With Before Sunset.
See, I haven't seen that trilogy.
Oh my God.
Yet.
Get off my show. Now you're gone. Holy shit. Really?
Linkletter is a big hole in. I think I've seen like two or three Linkletter films.
Doug, sit down with your wife and watch Before Sunset. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
Pour yourself a glass of Merlot for her, whatever she drinks, and you have a nice beer. And. Enjoy.
Okay.
That's all. That's all I ask. I don't need to watch two or three. Just watch the first one.
Okay.
That's all I'm asking. I gave it a 10 out of 10. It is on my top 10. If you ask me my favorite romantic film of all times, that's it. It's not a romantic comedy. It's an actual romance.
Okay.
And I think it's his best film.
It's fair.
And I don't like anything people say, so.
That's a big hole in my film. Like I said, Linkletter, I think I've seen Dazed and Confused and...
I've seen that.
I don't know. Did he do School of Rock?
Nope.
I think he might have
directed. Yes, he did. He directed. Yes. Oh.
So I've seen those.
Speaking of holes, I've watched Deliverance while I was on holidays.
Nice.
I've now filled in my Deliverance hole, so I don't have to get any more hate mail. You didn't watch Deliverance. I've seen it now. So I want that stated. I was, like I said, I would have 3 days and a lot of family stuff. I don't know, just a lot of work, but I did get Deliverance done, so it made me happy. And season 4 of The Love Boat, right. I have mentioned. And season 4 of The Shield I finished. Told you, a lot of TV. So continue, I'm sorry. Go back to Leave It.
I mean, it had a couple pretty cool, I thought, action-y scenes.
Where?
When the boat comes and when the boat's coming
that
towards the beach.
That was all CGI'd.
And the electric cars, the Teslas.
That
driving
was cool.
Unmanned.
You know what? I will give
I
you
thought
the electric
that was a
cars.
Cool scene.
Let's back
so
up to the boat scene.
Cool scenes.
Yes. You're on the beach. You're sitting there with your family like, oh, that boat's getting a little closer. Oh, that boat's getting a little... Wouldn't you have gotten up and left?
Maybe. I understand where Ethan Hawke's character is coming from, though, when he's saying, they have stuff on board that'll stop the boat, you know. It's just an optical illusion.
I don't. I would have been gone. Gone. Packed up in my car. My wife will tell you, I'm gone. Nope. Gone. Nope. I'm leaving. I'll meet you at the car. What? I'll be at the car. Don't care. I'm going to the car now. Just meet me there. I will be there. Nope.
I can see that.
I
would be more Ethan Hawke in that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Back this up. Last night, 5 minute drive from my house. A plane landed on a road, like a regular road, one of those small, I guess, biplanes. I don't know what they're called. Had engine trouble and landed on the road.
Was Harrison Ford okay?
He was okay, actually. Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, I had to go pick up my daughter. And that's the way I go. So I had to go up and around to pick her up to get extra. She goes, "Why are we going this way?" I said, "Oh, let me show you something." She goes, "Is that a plane?" Yes, that's a plane. On the road, there was a plane. So this is an omen. When things fall, move. Don't wait.
Okay. I don't think I gave my score on this one. I gave this one 3 out of 5.
It was kind of way too high. Two.
Okay, fair.
May
but
December,
I like
5.
The acting.
Forgot to give May
like
December,
the
it's 5. The acting was fabulous. I'm just not passing the film.
Okay. All right. So I guess our next film will be Poor Things, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, starring Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Mark Ruffalo, and Rami Youssef. I guess it's my turn to start. This movie is so different from any other Lanthimos movie I've seen. This movie kind of felt like Tim Burton meets Mary Shelley, and they did a bunch of acid together. This movie has so much more heart to it than the other Yorgos Lanthimos movies I've seen. And I do wonder if that's Emma Stone's producing, like if that's her influence on the film. I thought her acting was fantastic in this movie. I think she will definitely be getting an Oscar nom here. Just going from a child to an adult and just experiencing the world like that. I know Mark Ruffalo is getting a lot of praise for his role in this movie, but I got to say it was Willem Dafoe who really stood out for me here. He played such a caring father figure. But he was also scary as hell. The fact that he could be so dispassionate with science to do that to a corpse. And there was some dichotomy about Willem Dafoe that really captured me in this. But without a doubt, this was Emma Stone's movie, and she was amazing in it. Yeah, I don't really know where this ranks for me in other Lathimos films. I really like The Lobster. I really like The Favorite. So this one might be behind those two, but
did
I
see
gave this movie
Crossing
five out
of a Sacred Deer past Killing of a Sacred
I did
Deer.
I saw Killing of a Sacred Deer, but I liked those, The Favorite and The Lobster, more than that.
Has he only done four? I think those are the only four I've seen, the ones you mentioned.
He did Dogtooth in Greece. I haven't seen that one yet. And I think he has one other movie he made while in Greece.
Well, then I haven't seen them. This movie is... Are you done? I'm sorry. I apologize. Cut you off.
Yes.
This movie is insane. Absolutely freaking insane. Love it. So much fun. I don't know how to... I guess I'll just come out and say it. The masturbation scene made me laugh so hard.
Yes.
So that made me pretty... I got to be blind. I don't know how else to say that. Like, it happens. So that was good. I just thought this movie was in batshit crazy. It's the only way I can describe it, but that's what I expect from Lathimos. Exactly what I expect I got. Some film I have no idea where it's going, have no idea of the concept, but it was so much fun. Absolutely, yes. A great film. Made me actually laugh, like a prostitute making me laugh. I loved everything. It was fun. The ending was a little strange, but I'm like, I know who I'm getting when I watch his films. They're always strange at the end, and that was fine. I can't remember. Emma Stone's probably going to win the Oscar for this. I can't think of anybody to beat her.
I think it'll be between her and Lily Gladstone.
Is Lily Gladstone going to get an Oscar lead or an Oscar supporting?
They're putting her for lead.
It's going to be tough. Those are the two.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Emma Stone's going to take it, though. I think she's just...
I kind of think you're right about
that. I mean,
that, yes.
How much time? I mean, I've never found Emma Stone something I really need to see without clothes, but if you want to see Emma Stone without clothes, there's the film for you.
That is true. Yes.
It's just a wonderful performance by her. She actually surprised me that she had more range than I thought she did as an actor. I got to give her this. I mean, William Dafoe is just lovely and everything. Ruffalo's fun. I think Ruffalo does a lot of good work in this. A lot of heavy lifting at times, but not really. He kind of just gives you what you need and moves off. And then Emma Stone just picks up after that, which is great. I think this is a fun film. I can't say I would recommend this to people because I think you kind of just got to decide whether this is for you or not.
Yeah. All of Lathimos's films, like, they're very hard to recommend if you're not into a certain type of movie.
I think I could recommend The Lobster's pretty grounded.
Is it, though, because they turn people who don't fall in love into animals?
But I love it. I love The Lobster's still my favorite. I got to say, I still love The Lobster more than anything else. Mm-hmm. It made my top 10, though, on the US that year, the first year I saw it. I'm like, I love this film. Okay, well, I don't know what else we can say about Poor Thing. I like the imagery. Is it all shot on a green screen, a lot of it? It looks like a green screen.
It does, except for maybe like the, or sets. I think a lot of sets so that they could build it to make it look Tim Burton. I mean, Tim Burton's the name that comes to mind when I see like those creatures, those like hybrid animals that Willem Dafoe's character made, or that weird contraption where he burps up like the bubbles and stuff. That felt, like I said, very Tim Burton-y to me, but also it's Yorgos Lathimos, so it's darker than Tim Burton. It's more twisted. And yeah, I think a lot of sets were built. I think the only thing that looked real to me maybe was the manor house at the end where she meets her ex-husband, current, I don't know how to say what his relationship is to her. That felt like a location, but everything else felt constructed to me.
I agree. Well, it's a good film either way, so watch it, people.
Yes. So I guess we're going from some poor things to, I guess you would say, some scared things. We got some Godzilla Minus One, directed by Takashi Yamazaki, starring Ryan Osuki Kamiki and Minami Hamabe. And I apologize for getting those names butchered than they deserve.
You did a great job.
Why, thank you.
Since I'm the Godzilla fan, I will just go first. Wow. Wow. I can't say that after watching numerous piles of crap of Godzilla lately, and I mean piles high, I didn't think they could make a good Godzilla movie anymore. I didn't think one existed. And then Godzilla Minus One came out, and I'm like, this is a work of genius. It's exactly what I want Godzilla to be. Like, he doesn't need to have a little buddy. He does not need to be in the movie the whole time. It actually has a storyline that builds nicely. It has characters I care about. It shows me a life besides just fighting Godzilla. Excuse me. And I think that just the film brings that in. I mean, we actually care about the main character. He has a purpose. And it's not killing Godzilla for once. Or honestly worrying about Godzilla. It just sort of happens to him that he needs to worry about Godzilla in the end. But that aside, these Godzilla scenes are frigging amazing.
Yes.
Absolutely got it right for once. I'm like, oh, praise the Lord. I'm like, this is just, for far as I'm concerned, just perfect.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was about to say that, what could beat this? I mean, the first Godzilla is a masterpiece. This is probably in the top three. Because I do like Godzilla 2 a lot.
You have not seen Shin Godzilla yet, have you?
I have not seen Shin Godzilla yet. It's coming up. We'll get there.
Okay. But yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think this movie is a masterpiece. It's the original film was like Godzilla as a metaphor for, you know, nuclear devastation. This movie, I saw Godzilla as a metaphor for, you know, manhood, as a metaphor for survivor's guilt, as, you know, Godzilla represents, what the main character feels like he should have done. He should have kamikaze piloted that plane, but he was scared. And because of that, he feels his country lost the war. He could have acted again when Godzilla first showed up. But again, he was scared. And a lot of people on that island died because of his fear. So Godzilla is like his fear haunting him throughout his entire life. And yeah, this movie was amazing. I would say top three Godzilla films, but you know, the original is a masterpiece. I love Shin Godzilla. I think that movie is amazing. It's the thick of it. The British TV show with a kaiju in it. And I think that's amazing. And this one's definitely in the top three for me. I'm really pulling for it to win the Oscar for special effects this year. I think it 100% deserves it. Such a low budget, but the movie looked epic in scope for the small budget that it had. Do you have anything else to add here?
Yeah, a few things. My face is really red in this video, but since I probably won't put it up, nobody will see it. I'll have to fix that for another time. Look like I have a sunburn because it's the red from the screen. People, you don't need to hear this in the audio, but it's pretty funny for us watching. I think they really caught that home life. Like when he meets that woman and she's abandoned, the child was abandoned. And I mean, a lot of abandonment issues in this film. Like nobody is perfect. Everybody's broken. Mm-hmm. Society's broken, the mechanic's broken, like everybody on the boat's broken. Like it's really just not a happy world here.
No, war will do that. And yeah, this is about like found families as well. It's how you survive after a war.
Kind of feels like Walking Dead, really, a little bit at times, to show how they all come together and hang out. Mm-hmm. I mean, not saying The Walking Dead's any, the last few seasons you don't have to watch, but I just felt the family commitments there. But no, I just think this film is perfect. Hopefully it'll win special effects for me. That'll make me happy.
Yes.
And I can move on with my life with a big grin on my face that Godzilla won something.
All right. So we go from the highs of Godzilla Minus One to, in my mind, the incredible lows of It's a Wonderful Knife, directed by Tyler McIntyre, starring Jane Widdop, Joel McHale, Justin Long, and Jess McLeod. I can go first here since you went first on Godzilla. The writer of this movie also wrote the movie, now I'm blanking on the name, but he's a writer who worked with Chris Landon. And so I was hoping for something along the lines of a Chris Landon type fun horror film. This was not it. This was just a riff on It's a Wonderful Life. It's like the writer saw life and knife rhymed and thought it would be funny to make a horror film, but it wasn't. The kills were lackluster. There was no fun to it. Joel McHale, who's an actor that I genuinely enjoy, just seemed to be in this for the paycheck. Justin Long, a person who I don't enjoy that much, but have on occasion. I loved him in Barbarian. Here, he was just, again, like Joel McHale, in it for the paycheck. I would not recommend this movie at all. I'm giving it a 1 out of 5 Letterboxd score.
I'm back in the South. What movie has Justin Long made ever that he hasn't been there for the paycheck?
I said Barbarian. I liked him in Barbarian.
He was there for the paycheck. There's no way he knew that film was good. There's no way he knew his film was good. Not a chance.
I think he was good in it. I think his performance helped. I would say he knew that one.
Yeah, Draymond. I mean, he's done so many bad movies right now. I mean, he does Kevin Smith movies, you know? He did the Walrus movie. Then he did the Zach and Mary Make a Porno, I think he's in too. Yes, he is. I think he's in the beginning of that one too.
I think for like one scene, yeah. Yeah, and Freaky was the movie I was thinking of.
No, Freaky's excellent.
Body switching movie. I thought that was good, but same writer, this movie was not good.
I think this film is really made for teens, like early entry level, like a Blumhouse production for the most part, entry level teen horror.
Okay.
And I think that's the market it's going for. It's not going for us, the hardcore horror fans. There's no suspense for us, no rear terror. It seems to be that we're seeing the 80s coming back now, I will say. We're seeing a lot of 80s slashers return, which I love. Being the biggest slasher fan here, I would say I'm this guy. But, I mean, I sat through a film called Street Thug last night, right? Great cover. And they said Walking Dead meets, oh, my God, meets, forgot the guy's Romero movies.
Oh, Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, number 2.
Night of the Living Dead.
Number 2, the fun one.
Dawn of the Dead.
So that's what they said. So I'm putting this on. I'm like, this is terrible. But I think that's what we're getting now. We're getting these films that normally would have ended up straight on a streaming service. Isn't it Wonderful Knife? I don't think it got a theatrical at all.
I don't think so, no.
I think it went straight to streaming. So we're just looking at stuff that we would have saw at the DVD store on a Friday. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's new. I guess we'll take that home. So I think us looking at it as a big pile of crap, we can say that because it is, but we also need to start looking at, hey, where's the market for this? What's this market? It's a Christmas slasher. It's dumped on here. We know it's going to be bad. We can't say going in, we expected this to be good.
True.
So, and we watch, like, Joel McHale has not had a good movie ever. Justin Long's just here for paychecks, and so is probably Joel McHale.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, so it's the guy putting it on streaming. So this is just a straight payday around for everybody. Nobody's putting their heart and soul into this going, this is going to be amazing. I mean, the acting is terrible. The storyline is dumb. it looks like it's all shot the same sets over and over again. And the camera work is kind of just pedestrian. It looks like some guy's first film that got out of film school.
Yeah, I put the blame for this on the director. Like, oh, I said, the director, Chris Landon, who did Freaky, similar thing with the screenwriter, Freaky Friday, but with a serial killer and a victim. Kind of a hokey concept, but the direction of that movie was excellent. There was, the kills went so far over the top, more than I expected in that movie. I'm still thinking of the bandsaw killed where they cut the teacher in half. I was not expecting that to be that gruesome, but it was. And I give the director full compliments on that. I think the director of this movie just didn't have it in them to make the kills at least gruesome enough to be fun to watch.
And I also will give this film, like, Freaky had Vince Vaughn. This film really doesn't have a strong actor in it.
I would say Joel McHale could be a strong actor.
I don't know. I've never seen Joel McHale be strong in the movie.
His TV work is strong. I'm not saying it.
I can't say I've seen Community because I know you're a hardcore Community fan.
Mm-hmm. I am.
And he didn't show up on the Love Boat, so I can't give you any aspirations on his Love Boat deal. And yes, people, I still watch the Love Boat. Started season 6 recently, so 6, 7, 8, 9, almost halfway through.
All right, so I guess we will go from It's a Wonderful Knife to The Holdovers, a movie that actually has good performances in it. Directed by Alexander Payne, starring Paul Giamatti, Dominic Sessa, and Divine Joy Randolph.
Okay, are we getting into this holdover thing that I always get in trouble for?
Which is?
I don't think this is that good a movie.
Okay.
I think the acting is excellent all around. I think everybody involved, the actors, did a fabulous job. I don't think there's anything here I haven't seen before. I just felt I've been here, done that, watching this film. I mean, I've seen Paul Giamatti get angry at everybody and walk around and go, like, don't care. I mean, nothing here really astonished me. Did I enjoy the film? I thought it was okay. It didn't push any boundaries for me. It didn't do anything. I just thought it was very well acted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what I was looking for. I mean, the biggest complaint, I mean, I thought the ending was silly and kind of predictable. Because with the discussions between Giamatti and, I can't remember, Divine Joy Brown.
Randolph.
But you see them headed that way the whole time. So you pretty much know how the movie's going to end. You know? And the parents are just dicks. I'm kind of like, really? They're just dicks. I'm like, I don't like you guys either. But they did a good job. I mean, I always love what I see. Oh, my God. Tate Donovan? Is Tate Donovan the dad?
I think so.
I think it's
just
Tate Donovan.
Just the one scene, the stepdad. Yes.
And I thought they did a good job. But again, it just doesn't rise above okay for me. Like, was it well written? Yes. Was it well acted? Yes. But is it anything I haven't seen? No. It didn't do anything for me. It didn't push any boundaries. Which is what I want this kind of film to do.
Yeah, I will admit I kind of agree with you. I don't think
I have a fever. You just said you kind of agree with me. You must have a fever.
So far on these three movies we've just discussed, I we're kind of in agreement. It's crazy. This movie, I'm kind of surprised it got an original screenplay nomination. Just because I don't find it that original. We've all seen movies where the curmudgeonly teacher comes to respect and kind of mentor the problems. My take on this movie is that it just kind of bullies you with its charisma. I think the threads are amazing and I think without that, this movie just wouldn't be as good as people think it is. Paul Giamatti, I think, is fantastic. That this is like the kind of role he made to play. He is the curmudgeonly teacher with cross eyes that keeps switching and weird ailments that he gets to play for comedic effect. Divine Joy Randolph, to me, she was amazing. I was not expecting to like her character as much as I did. And I think that's because of Divine Joy Randolph. She embodied that character and made her so sympathetic. You really felt for her when you found out about her son and then or her husband. And she was really just sympathetic as the students there. She relied on Paul Giamatti just as much as them. And yeah, I think she was the one difference in this movie. I don't remember seeing a character quite like her in other movies like this before. Honestly, I would give this 3.5 to 4 stars out of 5. I'm kind of leaning at 3.5, but that's really just for the acting. The directing was fine. I get they wanted it to look, or Alexander Payne wanted it to look like a 70s film, so it has the grain. It looks like it was shot on film, but really it's all shot digitally, and the grain was added after the fact. But yeah, it's a fine movie. I don't think it's going to win the Best Picture Award. I have heard Paul Giamatti is maybe the front runner for Best Actor this year. I still think it'll be Cillian Murphy. But I definitely think Divine Joy Randolph is walking home with the Best Supporting Actress Oscar this year, and she 100% deserves it. It'd be my zone of interest. That was a bad transition for a movie about the Holocaust. But our next movie is The Zone of Interest, directed by Jonathan Glazer, starring Christian Friedel and Sandra Hüller, who you might have seen this year in Anatomy of a Fall.
Might have, might not have. If you haven't, you're an idiot.
Yeah. That's fair. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to give my thoughts?
I'll go first. I think who went first? I went first. No, it's your turn because I went first on Holdovers.
Okay. All right. I'm probably going to get a lot of shit for this. I think this is a 5-star crafted film, but to me, I would just give it 3 stars. I just was not a big fan of it. I think it's very well done. I think the acting is fantastic. I just didn't like it. I will be perfectly honest. I respect the hell out of the filmmaking. I understand that Glazer had set up like 10 cameras inside the house, 10 cameras outside the house, and people just played the scenes not knowing if they were in close-up, if they were even on camera. So they just went about like it was a real day, and I respect the hell out of that filmmaking. I respect that they didn't show the horrors, that the horrors are mostly heard off screen. I say mostly because you do see the fires at one point or at a couple points. But yeah, I will be honest, the movie just wasn't for me. I would give it 3.5 to 4 stars, probably 4 stars, but I wasn't really a big fan of this movie here. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
I got to say, this is must be the craziest episode. We're in full agreement.
Oh, wow.
I think this film lacked overall interest from it. I think it was beautiful to look at and interesting how things worked at this time. Like, I was fascinated by the politics, like the amount of stuff that the dad had to do and the mom had to do and the stuff happened. And they were like oblivious to everything. And everybody in the film just didn't worry about the concentration camp. They talked it like it was cattle. Mm-hmm. Like literally it was just goods and services being moved around, especially in the last scene when they discuss Hungary and how they're getting so many more people. So in Hungary, when they're doing that scene, they're like, it just amazed me that they're just discussing it as, like I said, as merchandise. Literally, you're going to get some, you're going to get some, you're going to get some. And they were discussing different ways to burn them alive. I was like, really? Like, just, I guess when you study it in school, you see it as one way. And when I did in university, I saw it a different way because I studied it from Germany's way. But I, just this way, I'd never seen it. That literally is just a guy going to work, a guy doing his job, the wife being at home, and this is just their life.
It's the banality of evil.
It scared the crap out of me. And especially when the stuff came over the top, like the people's ashes or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Gardner just put it into the soil. I'm like, what the? It just shocked me that nothing affected them. Mm-hmm. Like literally nothing. They're having a dinner party and saying, oh, good job. You moved a lot of stuff. Now, I did have a little bit of, I didn't feel they had a lot to do. Like the movie didn't do a lot for me. I mean, I don't think, I think it was a little long for what it was trying to get at. Now, I have a little bit of problem right near the end. This is my big issue. When they cut to the museum scene.
Okay.
Why are we here? It just sort of took me right out of the film at that point. I'm like, why are we here? Why do I need to be here?
I actually really liked that part.
But couldn't that have been at the very end? Finish off the scene with the guy, the mm-hmm. dad, and then cut to that. And I would have been fine with that. And showed me that over the credits. At the end.
Okay.
I put the credits very small at the bottom, make that big or something.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they just showed me rooms of shoes and this and that. I'm like, okay.
The way I saw that scene was the ghosts of the future coming to haunt him. Because I read that scene was based on the kind of the documentary about the genocides. I forget the name of that documentary now. But where he's trying to vomit, but he can't bring anything up. So it's like very performative on his part. And then it's just the ghosts of the future coming to show him the horrors that he's wrought upon this world by being just this cog in the wheel of evil and not truly seeing what he was doing as being evil.
But I saw that. And he was just doing his job, and he would argue that with us. He was told to do this. That's his job. He didn't think of it anything other way.
True. And that's the way he looks at it. And that's why it was a kind of a performative act of him trying to vomit. Whether he realizes it or not, but he was evil. What he was doing was horrible. And that's what I saw. I saw it as the ghosts of the future haunting him for what he did. And he truly does not deserve to have, you know, a peaceful life because he was a horrible person.
We had to look at this differently. I looked at that scene that the banalities continue it. Because mm-hmm. all we see is these people clean the windows. That's it. They don't talk. They're just cleaning. And one's vacuuming. They're not paying any attention to them either, those people that died. We're not seeing people paying money to see the museum. That I would understand. We're seeing people just doing menial jobs, cleaning the museum, wiping down the windows, doing the thing. Mm-hmm. They're not paying any attention to the Jews either.
Well, I saw them as caring for
by cleaning a window is caring?
Yes, because they're making it clear that you can see in and see what was left of the people, that they were caring for the remains of the, that's just how I saw it.
Well, this is all the stuff that the Germans didn't burn before the Russians mm-hmm. got there. I mean, they didn't get to the shoes. They didn't get to some stuff burned, but the Germans were burning everything. Documents, anything they have got burnt. Hitler got burnt. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was just saying, I don't know, I guess we got to look at this. And then it cuts back to the guy, and then the film's over. And I'm like, okay, so what do I understand? Sandra Hüller, all she cares about is her house and the kids. That's it. She doesn't care about the Jews. The mom's the only one that can say, okay, I can't handle this crap. I got to go. And she sees the smoke coming out. She's like, yeah, nope, I got to go. That conscience hit her so hard, she was out that door.
Yes.
And I kind of got that. When you see the smoke, I'm kind of like, she gets it.
Yeah.
Sandra Hüller is just like, hey, I like my house. I like my pool. Kids like it here. I'm not moving.
Yeah.
And that was it. And the way she treats her staff when she's angry is ridiculous.
Yeah. It the banality of evil. Like I said, she let it go to her head. She felt that, yeah, she truly did deserve to have these servants and to treat them horribly.
She says that when the guy is going to come to that house before he comes back, he doesn't want this house. He wants a townhouse, which I didn't know townhouses existed, or what I would consider a townhouse today. That's what he wants. So he wouldn't want this house. I'm kind of like, wow. It's not about what's going on in the world. They couldn't care less, Germans. Like, I really got the impression from this film that I can't say the German people didn't care. I think the German people are just happy they had jobs coming out of the Depression. That's what I think. I don't know. I just thought it was a weird scene. I'd love to hear Glazer's opinion on why it's there.
See, I would love to hear Glazer's reasoning for the infrared scenes. That I did not get what was going on there.
Where's that?
Where you saw the girl going out at night.
Oh, I did not understand that at all.
Delivering apples, like putting apples in place. I didn't get
those. Is that what she was doing? I thought she was trying to sneak out.
No, she was leaving apples in places.
I did not understand that scene at all.
Yeah, I didn't get it either. So that's something I would like to hear Glazer talk about, because I personally didn't understand it.
Okay. Well, I'm with you. So I came in as 7 on this film because I thought it looked good. I enjoyed most of it. I just didn't blow me away. And I wouldn't have given it a best picture nod. I will tell you 100% no.
Okay.
It's solid, but I mean, we're doing top 5. Ain't making it. Neither is holdovers.
What about directing? Would you?
Nope. Not for me.
Really? Okay.
But I could see why. If you're telling me, I thought it was nice, but I like Anatomy of Fall. My argument is that film is pretty much shot the same way as this one.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? There's nothing outstanding about his shooting. I like his technique, but I mean, you're comparing, I'm going to compare it to Oppenheimer. Or I can't compare the two. Oppenheimer's like way up here. This is down here for me. It's solid. It's a great film. Well shot. It's better shot than the Holdovers.
Okay.
But,
I'd agree.
You know, but I mean, The Holdover is a very tight film. This is a very open film, and we need to see everything. We need to see the kids at play. We need to see those long hallways. We need to understand what the family's going through.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's better to compare this to Oppenheimer, because we're trying to find out what Oppenheimer's going through. Similar thing. So, I don't know, Doug. This was a good discussion. Thank you for making me watch this film.
Of course.
And if they make it,
we will watch it and discuss it eventually.